Welcome to the Esports Economics Podcast. I'm your host, Tommy Clark, and on this podcast, we break down business strategy and marketing for business owners and creators in the gaming and esports industries. All right, and we are live. Welcome back to another episode here on the Esports Economics Podcast. I'm your host, Tommy Clark, and today I'm super excited because I have a guest on that is covering a topic that is very near and dear to my heart before I got into marketing and esports. And I still am very interested in nutrition and health and wellness and that side of things. And today I have my good friend, Dr. Jordan Tsai, here on the podcast with me to discuss health and wellness in gaming and esports. So Jordan, what's going on?
Hey, how's it going, Tommy?
Doing well, man. Just got out of one of my classes. It's midterm season, so things are getting a little busy over here. How are things on your end?
I don't miss that. Yeah, it's pretty good. I've been really busy. So I run an outpatient clinic too. So this is kind of my time off in the morning, and I usually work in the afternoons in clinic. But esports has picked up a lot with LCS starting. It's getting a lot more hectic for me. So yeah, all the teams I work with are starting to ramp up into their regular season. So it's getting a little bit more busy.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you taking your time off to come on the show here. I'm looking forward to this conversation. And just as we're getting into it, give everyone an idea of who you are, what you do, and how you got into physical therapy, and then how you got into physical therapy in the esports industry.
All right. That's actually a long story.
You can take as long or as short as you want with this. There is no limit. Feel free to go in as much detail as you want here.
Cool. Let's go way back. I started as an art student. And high school, I went to an art high school. I did one quarter in college majoring in studio art and decided, hey, this is not for me. Like, I can't see this as a career that I want to get into. And I've been gaming my whole life. So I basically dropped out of college and I went to the Army for 3 years. I went in as a combat medic. And while I was there, I decided, hey, you know, medicine is something that I really click with. I feel like it's something that I find enjoyable. It challenges me. And I, you know, not to toot my own horn, but I thought I was pretty good at it. So when I was deployed, I was working with a surgeon there who was, he's a really young guy, really smart, and he was assigned to our unit. And so he would do training with us. And in one of these training sessions, I was just chatting about patient cases and what I would do in a certain situation. And he's like, you know, I feel like you actually really understand the anatomy and physiology at a level that I wouldn't expect from most medics. Like, clearly you actually put time in to learn this stuff. He said, I think you're kind of wasted being in the military right now. You should get out and just go be a doctor. He's like, get out of the Army, go back to the States, go to college and go be a doctor. And me coming from an art background, I was never the best student. You know, I was okay. I was pretty good, but not like straight A's. I'd never gotten straight A's in my life. And I was like, that's something I've never heard before. I've never had anyone actually tell me that academically I could be strong enough to pursue any sort of medicine. So I was like, okay, I'll keep that in back of my mind. I got a little disillusioned with the military after 3 years because I was stop lost. So meaning I signed a 2-year contract and they involuntarily extended me for an extra year while we were deployed in Iraq. So I came back and I was like, I'm just getting out. This isn't worth it. I already did more than my time. So they're going to pay for college, which was kind of the original goal. So I got out, went back to college, tried to go the med school route. I was a biology major for a year and a half. Halfway through my second year, I decided, you know, this is also not for me. Chemistry was killing me. My grades weren't the best. And just knowing how competitive med school is, if you don't get an A, B, and all your science classes, you just don't really have a shot. So my decision making was, why am I going to struggle through this major that I actually don't really enjoy and potentially just to have it not get me to where I want to be? So I switched my major to kinesiology, which is more in line with what I was interested in anyway. So it's a study of exercise physiology. I had a basically the specific major is exercise physiology. So learning how exercise and movement affects the human body in a molecular level, physiologic level, which is really interesting to me. So I majored in that, and that happened to be the pre-PT route at my school. And so I started being in class with all these people who wanted to be physical therapists. And learning more about that, I started volunteering at the VA hospital in the physical therapy clinic. I volunteered at a couple local private practices. I worked as an aide for a year and a half and really just fell in love with what those people actually get to do with their patients. You get to spend a lot more time interacting with your patient, really getting to know them on a relationship level. You see them progress from, like, you know, as extreme as like, oh, I shattered my leg or something, can't walk, can't do anything, to like, hey, I'm going to start running marathons again. And I thought that was really inspiring, and it was really cool for me as a, you know, rewarding way to work with people. I think that was something that I realized after the military, is I wanted to get into a field where I'm helping people. I didn't want to end up, you know, just sitting behind a desk, crunching numbers or whatever, and just making a ton of money. I feel like for me personally, that's not very fulfilling. And I wanted to be able to work with people to help them become better. So I went to school. Luckily, I got into the PT school of my choice, and got, you know, finished in 3 years. As soon as I was getting out, though, my last year, I was looking at the industry, just the physical therapy industry as a whole. And I was realizing that, you know, if you're just coming out of school and you're just working as a PT, the odds of you having a very sustainable life are actually very, very hard. It's just really tough to overcome the massive student loan. I went to a private school, I went to USC, which is the top 2% of like most expensive schools in the country. So I came out with a significant amount of debt, and I was thinking, like, if I just work this regular job and try to pay off my loan over the next 25 years, it's just going to be really challenging to have any sort of lifestyle that I want to have. So basically the trade-off is you either start a business, or you find a niche. And if you find a niche, then you can monetize that more effectively. So I did both. I took over the practice I was working at because the owner retired, and I had asked her early on to give me mentorship and how to run a business. So she basically, you know, after I worked there for a year or so, she was like, hey, I want to retire. I've been, you know, I've been doing this for 35 years and I'm over it. And would you like to just take over? So there was a huge opportunity for me. And I thought, you know, oh yeah, this sounds great. I was a little nervous, but, and it has been quite a journey the last couple of years. So I've owned the practice for about a year and a half now. And with COVID 2020, yeah. I mean, if
how
you can take
in with COVID,
oh man, it's been terrible. But if you can get your business to survive something like this last year, I feel like there's nothing else the world can throw at you. But yeah. And then at the same time, I was also developing this project that I had, which was esports. I was really, like I said, I've been gaming my whole life. I think I started playing on the original Nintendo when I was 4 or 5. My cousins had one in the house, so I've always just been in love with it. And I felt like esports was like the culmination of everything I wanted as a kid. You know, even, you know, playing when I was a teenager, esports didn't really exist back then. You know, I'm turning 34 next week, so it gives you an idea of kind of what timeline. In the 90s, right, like people would game competitively, but it wasn't like as organized as it is now. You didn't see these events that you see now. So all the guys I work with, I tell them all the time, like, you're living my like 12-year-old dream. Like, I always wish there was pro gamers when I was a kid. So I was always into it, and I looked at the industry. I was like, hey, that's a niche I really want to get into. So I started Googling stuff like, is there physical therapy in esports? Because in my mind, these athletes are putting their bodies through the same type of exertion and the same demands physically that a lot of my patients are, right? Most of my patients are desk workers. So people who sit behind a computer for 8 to 10 hours a day, they develop neck, shoulder, back pain, wrist pain, all these things. I was like, I can't imagine that these professional gamers aren't undergoing the same thing, if not worse, because it's exacerbated by how fast they have to do everything, how long they have to do everything. There's no breaks most of the time. And so I was like, that was the theory behind it. And I started looking into it. There's not a lot of PTs doing it. I know there's a few that started maybe a year or two before me, but I didn't really have a choice because I got out of school at a certain time. So I started looking into it. I was like, how can I get into this industry and how can I bring value from what I know to these organizations and help these guys play at their best and for longer? And so long story short, I guess I got very fortunate. I got introduced to Cloud9 as my first team. And they're, you know, one of the biggest organizations in the US actually. And at first it started as, hey, we have one or two players that might have some issues. Why don't you come in, see them, and it was almost like a test, right? Like they wanted to see how I interacted. I actually, my very first patient at that team was the owner. So I worked with Jack.
No way.
Yeah. And he's like, I think it was like, you know, an audition. He's like, hey, I want you to take a look at me. So it went well. And, you know, I developed a relationship with them. And then over the next year, I was able to work with their management and kind of guide them along my thought process towards prehab versus rehab. You don't ever want to have a player end up in a situation where they need PT because they're having so much pain that they can't play. That's the worst case scenario, actually. I was trying to educate them that, you know, the best case scenario is we regularly do things intermittently every week and just kind of stay on top of this stuff, and your guys never lose any playtime over the course of a season. So that was kind of, I think, a new idea for them. And in esports and as a whole, the two teams that I work with, Cloud9 and Evil Geniuses, are the only teams that I know of in LA that even do this every week. I think, you know, there's some other big organizations that do it a little less frequently, but it's something that I think orgs have to start looking at, because it's just, if you're investing this much time, money, resources into your players, how can you afford them to have to sit for 2 weeks because they had a wrist injury or something like that? You know?
Yeah. And that makes a ton of sense. That was actually leading into my next question, which was going to be, what is like the overall adoption in the industry of this type of approach of really being proactive when it comes to physical therapy versus waiting until an injury happens and the player has to sit out. So to your knowledge, those two organizations and like a handful of other ones are the only ones that are really taking this seriously right now?
Yeah. Yeah. In my experience. Yeah. I mean, I think European teams and teams in Asia have looked at it a little bit more closely. In the US, it's just a large split between the top tier orgs and the lower tier orgs in terms of resources. So there's a few that have brought healthcare in terms of like trainers, nutritionists, sports psychologists, I think is the biggest one. Almost every single org has a sports psychologist now. I think they understand the value of that position. Physical therapy is still kind of an outlier.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's mostly a lack of awareness. Nobody really understands the difference between us and personal trainers. And that's something I've struggled to educate teams on. And we've had teams actually who had PTs and they decided, hey, you know, let's just try just a trainer for a while, just to see, because it's cheaper. You know, it is cheaper. I'll say that. The big difference is that I like to stay within my scope. So I don't like to say that I am your, you know, catch-all healthcare specialist. You bring me onto your team and I will take care of your psych, your physical performance, your training. Your nutrition. There's some people that want to do that, and I don't think it's ethical in some ways, and I don't think it's an accurate way to portray what we are. PTs in general are a more generalist approach to healthcare. We're very holistic. I can't give medications. I legally cannot prescribe medications. I can't give you actual dietitian advice. There's a lot of things I can't do. What I can do is give you, here's an approach to set up your habits and your environment and your daily training to give you the best chance of success. Like, these are the optimal ways that your body should function, and this is how you can achieve those things. So I think the biggest difference for me between us and trainers is that a trainer's job is to improve your physical function, right? They train you to be better at either strength, endurance, cardio, whatever it is. For a PT, my job is to ensure that you're optimizing your physical function. The difference there is that they can't treat injuries. They actually cannot diagnose or treat any injuries. A PT can. So if someone has an issue, unfortunately, I've seen a lot of trainers like, oh, try this exercise, try to do this. And they may be coming from a very well-intentioned place and they may actually be educated in that area, but they're not going to be as highly educated in the specific pathoanatomy as a physical therapist. And they're really not qualified to actually do a differential diagnosis to determine what the source of the injury is. So I've had patients in the past who've come from trainers at the local gym or whatever, and they've come, not esports, just in general. They're like, oh, I had a lot of back pain. It was going down my leg. My trainer thought I pulled my hamstring, so he was having me do all these things. And I was like, you know, they didn't rule out the fact that you might have, you know, irritated a nerve coming out of your back, because they can't. They don't know how to do that. And so it just delays your recovery process by weeks to months and maybe even exacerbates an injury. So I think there's a very clear distinction. I also try, I will write workout plans for people if they ask me to, but I try not to be a personal trainer for them. You know, I'm like, most of the teams I work with, they have trainers too. So I'm like, why don't you work with your trainer on this? I can talk to the trainer and give them guidance and what I would focus on, but I'm not going to sit there and write out your entire periodized weekly workout, because that's not really my job either. You know?
That makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense. That's surprising to me. Like going into this, I would have thought that physical therapist would have been up there as far as probably the most important member of your staff to have on, because like you said, you're in this position sitting at a desk for 8, 10, 12 hours a day in the same position, and problems can happen that way. But I mean, the way you explained it makes sense. There's the lack of awareness between the difference of a PT and a PT. The acronyms don't really help all that much.
But
that makes sense. And I think we'll definitely see a larger adoption of real physical therapists on those rosters going forward. I'm curious, in your experience in the field, what's the frequency like of injuries in esports? Because I think a lot of people, maybe in the esports scene, understand the physical strain that their bodies are under, but maybe some people who are newer to esports or don't really know what that day-to-day looks like might be thinking, like, how often can someone actually get injured from sitting in a desk all day? So speak about your experience on that.
It's first of all, we have to distinguish an injury from pain, right? Like you've heard that in sports a lot, right? Are you injured or are you in pain? I think almost every gamer who's played more than 1 hour at a time has had pain. I would put money on that. Like, you know, 99% of people who have played for more than 1 hour have experienced some level of pain afterwards. And it could be soreness in the traps. It could be, you know, you feel like your wrists are really tight. It might be, you know, burning or whatever in your eyes. There's all sorts of stuff that happens just as a result of endurance deficits. An actual injury, you know, there needs to be some research on that, but the statistics are relatively low, meaning that a true injury would be something like, hey, I got an ulnar or some sort of nerve irritation so bad to the point that I actually had to stop playing, and then I had to treat it as a medical pathology. What I kind of see is more, because these overuse injuries or overuse issues lead to an injury, it's more of a continuum. And so now, especially that I've been working with teams more regularly, we don't ever get to the injury point. That's my goal. We never actually hit the injury point. What we try to work on is that gradual buildup. How do we set up your position? How do we set up your environment? How do we have healthy practices incorporated into your schedule that prevent you from getting to that injury point? That being said, you know, there's a lot of big names who have very recently retired because of injury issues. The most notable I just saw, you know, I think a few weeks ago, is Zuma. Professional Call of Duty player. Really sad. I was a big fan of his when he was on FaZe Clan. Like, that guy was just killing it. And the thing is, he's still playing. You know, he's still streaming. He's still playing. But I think it's just the injury has gotten to the point he can't play competitively. And that's really sad. You know, like you're taking young athletes at basically the peak of their prowess. Like, you know, they're retiring way too early for physical reasons that are easily avoidable usually. And so when a lot of people, I think this kind of ties into the misconception too, that 25 is old in esports. That's a very antiquated, I think, an outdated way of thinking, because all the research shows that reflexes don't significantly slow down till after your 30s. You know, so it's not even an excuse to say, oh, this guy's 28, he's washed up, he's past his prime, because an 18-year-old has faster reflexes. That's not true. A lot of times the 28-year-old is actually better in some ways because they've played this game for 10 years longer than this other kid. But what does slow down is maybe their ability to play at the highest level physically, because they haven't taken care of their body up to that point. So conversely, you're also seeing some players, Hiko on 100 Thieves, he's a Valorant player, switched from CSGO. He's 31 and he just won the first major this last year, playing at a very, very high level. He's probably, you know, he's probably the best Sova player I'd say in the NA for sure. But so you can see that, you know, at his level, his reflexes are not significantly slower than some 18-year-olds. He will crush 99% of 18-year-olds online. Like, it doesn't have to do with the physical function of it. I think that, you know, the big names are the ones that we see, but there's a ton more people, gamers, especially streamers, who are suffering injuries because of a lack of awareness. They just don't know what they need to do. They let these things build up because, like, oh, it's always hurt when I played this game, and it's just starting to hurt a little bit more, so I just need to play a little bit less and then it'll get better. What you don't realize is the reason you're hurting is because of how you're playing. And so if you can start adjusting those little things, and the concept I use is strain rate versus recovery rate. If you can reduce your strain rate and improve your recovery rate, then every night you go to sleep, you should be getting back to basically levels, you know, ground zero to start the next day again. The problem is always when people's strain rate exceeds their recovery rate. And then so over time, they start to build up more and more stress, and then eventually their tissues fail.
Makes sense. Yeah. Makes sense. Now with this, like you and I talking, it's very clear to me how this is massively important. When you get to talk with individual players, what does that buy-in typically look like on there? And obviously it's going to vary from individual to individual, but as a general, like in your general experience, has there usually been pretty good buy-in overall, or is it a struggle to get these players to trust the process and really lean into what you're saying?
Yeah, I think that most of the impression I get when I talk to players for the first time is like a little bit of hesitation. You know, okay. They've grown up their whole lives hearing sit up straight, have good posture, don't play so much if you're hurt. You know, there's all these like things that the first thing I tell them is I don't want you to stop playing. I understand that gaming is a part of your career if it is. And I understand it's part of your life. You know, like I said, I think the one big thing that gets me a lot of buy-in with players is I play a lot of games. You know, I play a lot of the similar games to what they play. So I totally understand where they're coming from. My fiance gets on my case all the time. She's like, why are you always playing? I'm like, I have to feel what they're undergoing. Yeah, exactly. It's like, how can I tell somebody what to expect if they play 8 hours of League of Legends if I haven't done that? You know?
Yeah.
But no, and that's kind of just my excuse to play more games. But at the same time, it's also, I think I'm coming at it from a position of I'm a gamer first, and I'm also a physical therapist. So I really want to use my knowledge and skills to help you do what you love versus being I think the problem is a lot of them have gone to healthcare before and they've gotten the message, hey, if it hurts when you play 6 hours a game, stop playing. And as soon as you say that to a pro player, they're tuned out. They don't care what else you have to say because they're not going to do that. They're not going to stop playing. So, I mean, you've basically lost them at that point. I think you have to approach any patient, and this goes outside of even esports, but any patient you have to meet at their level. You can't expect someone to completely 180 their life around unless it's life-threatening and expect to have that stick. You know, we see the same effect in fad diets. We see it in really intense exercise changes. You know, like people want to be like, hey, I want to lose 80 pounds in the next 3 months. What do I have to do? Like, that's crazy. How about you just start living a healthier lifestyle, and over the next few years, you're going to lose 80 pounds. So I think that buy-in is really important, but it's about meeting the players where they are and understanding them and accepting what they do first before you can give them advice.
Got you. And from your experience, what do you think, like, let's say a player was on top of this stuff from the time they were like 12 years old, they're really focusing on maintaining it and prehabbing, as you said earlier, what do you think is that peak career length that you could have in an optimal situation where you're not saying a player is old at 25? Like, how long do you think in theory a player could keep playing if they were on top of this stuff?
Well, that's a really interesting question, because I don't think there's a right answer. I don't think we've seen it yet. I mean, if you look at traditional sports, look at Tom Brady, right? He's about to play in his eighth Super Bowl or something. That dude is 43. And if you had asked anyone, can a professional athlete play quarterback into his 40s, most people would say no, and play well, right? A lot of people have done it, but to go to a Super Bowl in your 40s is unheard of, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think he's tipping the entire industry on its head, because what is he doing different than every other 40-year-old quarterback? He's really invested in his health since he was 25, you know, in his 20s, earlier even. He's been on this, you know, plant-based diet, regular stretching, exercise. He's got multiple healthcare specialists constantly attending to him. Same thing with like LeBron James. You know, that guy's also in his 40s, right? And he's playing at such a high level still, and he beats his body up when he plays. I think that those sports are so much more physically demanding than esports in terms of physical demand, that there's no peak to what like a professional gamer could probably do if they actually stuck with it. And then I think that it'd be really interesting to see how good will they get, because esports is so mental, right? It's so based on your experience, and it's so based on, have you seen this situation as many times as the other person and figured out how to react to it? If we take the best players in the world and give them an extra 20 years of practice, how good are they going to be? So I think it's really exciting to see that physically, because the demand is less. I mean, nobody playing Call of Duty or, you know, League is getting tackled every other day. So So I feel like, you know, physically, there's no reason why they can't play well into their 40s or 50s. It's then we start talking about, does reaction time matter that much? But then also research has shown that in most sports, most games, reaction time is actually not that important, because the veteran players set up situations in which they predict and anticipate what's going to happen, so they don't have to react. So if you watch a lot of professional Valorant or CSGO or COD, when they come around a corner, they're not coming into a room blind and then reacting to what they see.
Yeah.
They understand map awareness and they understand the situation that, like, hey, if I was in this room trying to defend this bomb site, I would be sitting over there. And they come in and they're already looking there. They don't need to react. They see what they expect and they just kill the guy. So I think that, you know, as players play for longer and longer, that level of experience and know-how just continues to climb, and it can maybe overcome or supersede the need for reaction time.
Okay. How about, you had mentioned like Tom Brady, for example, and typically in football, like a quarterback isn't someone who's under as much physical duress, assuming as a decent offensive line, but in most cases, he's not someone that's under a ton, like, as much physical duress as, let's say, an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman or a linebacker or someone like that. Do you see that sort of phenomenon in esports when you're looking at different positions or different roles in the same game, and also just across games in general, like playing Valorant versus playing League of Legends versus playing COD? Do you notice anything like that, of like different issues popping up for different types of gamers?
Yes. I think the main point of your question, I do see a difference in physical demand based on what game you play. So there's very different stresses placed on the wrist, arm, hand, between console and PC. Obviously, there's a huge difference. And then between PC games, if you play something like a MOBA, like League of Legends, versus playing a first-person shooter, the demands are different for that as well. And then to go to the other side of the spectrum, playing something like StarCraft is a completely different demand than those other two. And so each game has its own specific variances that are, you know, your PT or healthcare specialist has to take into account. And I think that's actually the really exciting part for me, is that this is kind of new territory. There's not a lot of PTs doing this. And so there's not a lot of research on it. And there's also just not a lot of experience. So I think the most exciting thing for me in the last few years has been putting together like these systems in my head of what to expect based on who I'm working with. So if I'm going to see a Valorant player for the first time, I'm already in a better place, kind of knowing what to expect than I think I was 3 years ago, just coming into esports, even though I was already a physical therapist. So we can talk a little bit about the statistics if you want, but most of it has to do with the settings that players keep. So like, you know, the difference in mouse sensitivity between two different games. Generally FPS, they play at a lower sensitivity to be more accurate, and MOBAs, because they play with mostly their wrist, they play at a much higher sensitivity. And then also the keyboard hand demand, with first person shooters, if you're using the WASD keys in order to move, you're using a lot of sustained holds. Whereas in a MOBA, you're clicking one time to use an ability, or multiple times, right? You're not doing a lot of sustained holding of buttons. And then conversely with StarCraft, their keyboard hand is usually the main problem for them, because they're hitting hundreds of keys every few seconds. It's actually insane. If you watch the keyboard hand on camera of a professional StarCraft player, it's wild. I don't understand how they do it. Because they basically have to hotkey like 30 different things, and it's just constant. Wild. Yeah.
Got you.
Yeah.
Cool. Now I'm curious about your thoughts. We've been talking a lot about esports and like these high level organizations and esports athletes. And I think there's a pretty, I don't want to say clear, but I think we can both agree that at some point there will be mass adoption of physical therapy and the importance of physical health at that level across the board. What are your thoughts on like the wider gaming population, which might be a bit of a harder code to crack? Because in esports, you have a very specific goal of competing at the highest level, whereas a lot of people in just general gaming might not have that goal. They're just doing it for leisure, to pass time, and they might not have that real reason to get in shape and take care of physical health. But I mean, we can both agree that still physical health is extremely important, even if you're not a competitive esports athlete. So what are your thoughts on that?
I see it two ways. So the first way is that esports is, like most professional sports, the face for a larger picture, right? The NBA is the face of basketball, and basketball as a whole is thousands of times bigger than the NBA. So I try to use esports and the teams I work with and the stuff I do with these players as a platform to help gamers in general. The really interesting thing, I think, the second point is, in gaming, I think it's unique to gaming, is the physical demand and the stresses placed on the body are very comparable between a pro and an amateur. And you don't see that in other sports. If you play in the NFL professionally, you were getting hit so much harder than some high school kid, right? If you're playing the NBA, you're expected to be able to do things physically that a high school or, you know, college or even a recreational player of the same age in basketball doesn't have to do. Right. There's just, it's just two different games, even though they're technically the same game. In esports, the mechanical and physical demand, you may not be able to do what pros do on stage in terms of like how accurate they are, how quick they are, all that stuff. But the physical demand of what you're doing using a keyboard, mouse, or a controller are almost identical. And so in a lot of ways, I think that the work I do with esports professionals actually translates better to the amateur population than in any other sport you could think of, because it's more directly applicable. So I absolutely think that, you know, it's important to take health into consideration. It's important to, you know, want to improve your body. But if you really want to play longer and into your old age, and every gamer I know wants to play basically forever, you know, like I can't see myself not gaming when I'm 50 or 60. Like, why not? You know, you don't play the same games probably, but you could, you know, I could imagine enjoying like an RPG when I'm like 65, you know, just playing through a story and like it'd be fun. But the physical demand being the same, you have to factor that in, because if you're playing 8 hours a day just on your own streaming or just playing games on your own, the physical demand on you is almost identical to a pro playing 8 hours a day. Right. There's not a lot of change there, actually. So if they're investing in their body, it's because they want to keep playing like that for the next 10 years. And if you're an amateur gamer and you're not doing that, the odds of you having some sort of issue in the future are actually much higher, because you're not doing all the other ancillary stuff that they're doing as well. They're regularly exercising, not just PT. They're actually, you know, like Cloud9 is probably an outlier here, but they force their players to work out every morning at 9:30 or whatever as a team. It helps build team cohesion, but also it forces them to work on their physical health. And I think that's just, as humans, we need to do that. We don't move enough as a species anymore because of computers and how long we're sitting. There's all these other health effects that are compounded by not being physically active. So I think it's absolutely important. You know, if it's not even just about gaming, it's like, if you're a gamer and you want to live longer, you know, I think that's the overall goal for everyone, right? You want to live longer. Yeah. You got to take care of yourself. You can't just kind of pass this stuff off into your 30s and 40s, because when you're 18 to 20, you can get away with a lot. I mean, I think we all realize that once you hit your 30s and 40s and 50s, it slows down a lot. And then you have to actually put in the work. And if you haven't gotten in the habit of starting to do some of these habits early, those years are so much harder. It's like I said, prehab versus rehab. You don't want to be on the rehab side. Then you have to do 10 times as much to catch up to where you should be as if you just eat healthy and do regular exercise from when you're young. It just becomes a habit throughout your whole life, and you don't actually have to think about it that much.
Yeah. Yep. Makes sense. Now, you'd mentioned movement, how that's very important. And as a gamer, even just a professional sitting at a desk all day, it can be very difficult to justify getting up and going for an hour long walk when you have to either get scrims in or just do some work if you're at your job. What are you, just moving into like a little bit of applicable just health tips here, what are some of your favorite ways to encourage gamers and people at that desk all day to get movement in without them feeling like they're taking away from what they're doing on screen?
I think that what I try to do is schedule in regular rest breaks based on what you're doing. So try to set achievable milestones. So for most games, it's easy. Hey, after you finish this game or this set of games, get up, and you don't have to walk for an hour. Just get up and move through full range of motion. Like, you know, you twist your back, you open your arms up, just walk for a minute, go get a glass of water and come back. That alone can oftentimes reset you almost to the point of where you were before the game. And if you just keep doing that throughout the day, that's what I talk about, the strain versus the recovery. You're recovering at that point. If you just keep doing that, you'll almost never get to the point where you're sore, tired, having that, like, you know, the worn down feeling of having sat at your desk for 6 straight hours.
Gotcha. Cool. And then how about hydration? Because I think that's the one thing that I think everyone in general just tends to suck at. I know, yeah. Like I'm literally studying nutrition, and I'm the worst at staying hydrated throughout the day. I'll forget.
That's a hard one.
I can't imagine. Yeah, I can't imagine what gamers like focused on their game again, just on the screens 8-10 hours a day. How do you foster that behavior in the people you work with?
It's just habit formation. I struggle with that as well, but I think that, you know, like we talked about with the rest breaks, if you get up and your task is to go get a glass of water, now you've accomplished both things. You go get a glass of water. That is assuming that you also drink some of it. That would be good. That would help a lot, just kind of creating these habits. The other thing I know a lot of streamers do is they'll set like command settings in their stream. So, you know, if you have channel points, you can tell them, hey, drink water. So they'll get their viewers to actually remind them to drink water. So it's just doing whatever you have to do to create habits. And that's something I stress with everyone I work with is I don't want to give you a program that you have to do like homework every day. I'd rather have you develop better habits so you don't have to think about it. It's just the way that you live your life is overall better for you.
Makes sense. Now, what are some of your favorite like success stories in the players that you've worked with? Like one or two players that you started with, maybe they weren't in the best place and you were able to really help them turn around, because ultimately as the player's doing the work, but like, you were able to ultimately help them turn whatever situation they were in around.
This is actually, so I can't violate HIPAA or anything, but I was working with a player remotely. Yeah. Meaning online only. I've never even met him in real life, IRL. So, he was having really bad wrist pain. He was basically unable to play the game he was playing. He's a professional. He's like, we have a large thing coming out soon. I have to start grinding and I can't even play more than 10 minutes right now because my wrist is killing me. So I spent 2 or 3 sessions with him, about an hour each, just online chatting with him, looking at his setup, giving him exercises to try, trying to do an evaluation online with like, okay, where is the pain? What is going on? And then I think we kind of identified a few issues that he had with his setup and also with his habits. So all we did was tweak a few of those things. We changed his actual ergonomics of his desk and his chair configuration. And gave him a few recovery strategies. And he actually, I literally messaged him yesterday. I was like, hey, just checking in. How are you doing? He's like, great, man. Like, I can actually play as long as I want now. I just have to do certain things. I have to, you know, I ice after I play and I do my stretches in between. But he's like, I don't really know what happened. It just, my wrist pain went away. And I was like, you know, there's a lot that happened. You know, you changed what you were doing, you changed how you were doing things. And then over time, your body's trying to heal you. I think that's something else that I always try to stress with people that is it's interesting. Psychologically, we're constantly conditioning ourselves to think our body is working against us. We're always like, oh, it's my bad knee again. Or like, oh, my stupid hand is hurting. Why is it always doing that? It's not. It's whatever you're doing is causing pain. And your body's actually constantly trying to heal itself. And so if you don't give it a chance to heal, it will never heal. So what I try to think of this philosophically with my job is I'm just trying to set you up physically or extrinsically to put your body in the best position to heal itself. And that's kind of cool, right? Like it is a very efficient organism. It's going to heal itself eventually. You just have to give it a chance.
Yeah, 100%. That totally makes sense. Now, kind of shifting back into the business side of things a bit, what do you think the future looks like as far as your role in the industry and the role of physical therapists? Like, what do you think that process will look like getting from where we are now with kind of some adoption, but not as much as there needs to be to full adoption in the esports industry?
Well, in terms of physical therapy specifically?
Yeah, you can go physical therapy specifically, or we can just go health and wellness in general, whatever route you want to take that.
Yeah, I think health and wellness is definitely an area that is growing. A lot more orgs are starting to invest time, resources, and attention towards health and wellness. And the debate and the competition now is between all the specialties and medical professions and the health and wellness professions. We're all fighting for this slice of a pie now. So I think it's constantly going to be about who is going to demonstrate the most value at the cheapest price, right? Like any other industry, you want to give the best product for the lowest price. Lowest price possible at that level of quality, obviously. So my business model, and I can share this, it's fine, is that I basically built a company, Respawn Therapy, to provide physical therapy services to gamers. And I say that because we obviously work with a lot of professional teams, but my goal is to be able to provide the same services to any gamer who needs it. Gotcha. And so it's going to be like a traditional physical therapy model, except we're cash-based. We don't take any insurance. But it's going to be, if you need help because you're having a problem, we can help you because we have experience working with this specific population. If you tore your ACL, you know, usually you don't want to go to just any physical therapist. You want to look for someone who has experience in working with that specific injury and the recovery process. After you've had surgery, you want to have, and probably if you tore it playing sports, you probably want to find someone who's also well-versed in the sport that you're trying to get back to. So in my mind, you know, going to a general PT will help. They'll probably be able to help you out with your problem, but they're not going to look at it from the lens of being a gamer, right? Like they're going to look at it as you're a person with this specific problem. I think that what we do differently is we're always approaching it from gamer first. So looking at what are the demands, what are the specific considerations that you have to have when you're working with a gamer. And then we provide that same service. Because like I said, it's interesting that the pros are undergoing a lot of the same issues that amateur gamers undergo a lot of the same issues pros have. It's much more symmetrical. So my business model is actually to basically have PTs all around the country that kind of work for or with me, and providing services to each state and hopefully internationally eventually. But I think that, you know, the pro teams are the easiest to get into right now because they have resources and they have clear and obvious need for those services. The harder sell is going to be, okay, regular people, you do need to invest in your health. Right. And so what I've done is I started this Twitch channel to provide awareness. I do interviews with pro players, coaches, performance experts in the esports industry. And I also, you know, I'm pretty active on social media, sharing information, putting videos out of exercises people can do. I put stuff on like information on common pathologies you might find. So a lot of times I've had a lot of people, you know, they look at some of those videos like, oh, wow, I didn't realize that pain in my arm is actually a result. And that's something I can actually work on. You know, it's just kind of like so many gamers have been like, oh, I played like 6 hours yesterday, so my arms are really hurting. And that's just like expected. And like, it doesn't have to be that way though. we've normalized pain when we don't need to. But I think that, you know, overall the industry itself is still growing. You know, there's a lot of talk on like LinkedIn and stuff about how the esports is a bubble, right? But if you look at it, gaming is not a bubble. Gaming has been around for the last 40 years and has continued to grow every year. Yeah. Like there's no denying that gaming is going to be around forever. Esports is, again, just the face of that. And so I think that it's disingenuous to call esports a bubble because esports is built atop a population of gamers. Esports wouldn't exist if there were no gamers. But because there's so many gamers, esports has to exist. Right. Like at any point, if you play anything, any sort of common task, there will be a human desire to compete. Right. And there's going to be some sort of league that's going to take advantage of that. Like we all like competition. So if you have, I mean, there's like competitive Minecraft and stuff, you know, there's like, there's all sorts of stuff, right? People love to compete. So I don't think, you know, the industry is going to get any smaller in the next 20 years. I think it's going to continue to increase exponentially. I think we've seen more gamers and more esports money invested in the last 10 years than ever before and ever thought possible. You see outside companies are just looking at it as eyeballs. Now, if you invest in a professional esports team now, per dollar, you're getting way more attention for your brand than you would traditionally advertising at the Super Bowl or on TV or social media. Like it nothing gets you that kind of visibility, like actually going into a gaming team or whatever now.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. I mean, if you look at organizations like 100 Thieves, I think is the gold standard of this. Like they can
FaZe Clan.
FaZe Clan, Optic, like all the endemic orgs there. Totally agree. I can't see a world in which it just crashes and burns. Like that doesn't make any sense to me, just given how everything has been trending over the past decade. And even before that, like you said, with just general gaming over the past several decades, it just doesn't make sense. Like, oh, it's a bubble. So I'm with you there. Yeah. Are there any products or services right now out there in esports and health that you're excited about that you've seen kind of coming up or that you've used personally with your clients maybe that you're excited about right now?
Yeah, I can't say too much. I have a few confidentiality agreements in place, but I'm really excited for a couple projects happening this year. So stay tuned for that. But I'm working with a couple big organizations, big companies on bringing health and wellness to the forefront of the products they design. I think that traditionally in the past, a lot of gaming companies appeal more to the aesthetic of gamers. You'll see a lot of stuff like, oh, gamers like bright lights and they like all this flashy stuff. And there's like a very specific style they go for. And I think that now there's so many people doing that. What's the next thing? And the next thing in my mind, and a lot of the companies I've talked to about this, it's ergonomics, it's health. Okay, so we already have the best looking stuff. How do we now make it functionally better than everything else? So I'm excited. I'm going to be working with a couple companies again soon on bringing that sort of thought process into their products. In terms of like actual devices, you know, I've been asked things about like, oh, posture garments, things that pull your shoulders back, wrist guards, all this stuff. I'm like, if you just had better posture, wouldn't that be infinitely better than having like some sort of shirt that pulls your shoulders back? Because what happens is if you have a weak muscle and then you then make that muscle even weaker by, you know, supporting it all the time, it'd be like walking with crutches for your whole life for no reason. Your legs would get really weak. You know, you can't put a crutch on something that's already weak and hope to make it better. That's counterintuitive, right? So I try to focus. I mean, I'm coming from a physical therapy bias, but I try to focus a lot on creating better habits, strengthening what needs to be strengthened, and teaching people how to take care of themselves before they rely on some sort of device to do it for them.
Gotcha. And this next question, I'm not sure if you'll be able to answer it, because like you said, there might be some confidentiality agreements there. But I know a really common product that gamers look to purchase and are maybe researching right now is like a gaming chair. Do you have any recommendations there that you have found worked really well with the clients that you work with? Again, if you can't answer this one, no worries, but do you have any recommendations there?
Yeah. So that's one of the things. I can't talk too much about specifics, but I will say that what I tell everyone I work with, if you're looking for a good gaming chair, you're looking for adjustability. The number one thing a gaming chair needs to have is multiple points of adjustability, because we're all different. Humans are all built differently. We're all very, even people of the same height have different ratios of leg length to arm length to back length, right? So you need to find something that can accommodate the most possible variances and possibilities in order to match what you need. So a good gaming chair should have armrest up and down, you know, a height adjustment, swivel adjustment, tilt adjustment, the seat should go up and down, the seat should tilt, the back of the backrest should go up and down. You should have the option for lumbar support. People oftentimes think lumbar support just has to be there because it helps your back, and that's not true. I've treated multiple people who have excessive lumbar extension, meaning that their lumbar is actually too far forward and it causes back pain. So I actually tell these people, why don't you try slouching for a couple hours a day? And it sounds so counterintuitive, but and they always end up feeling better. I'm like, you got to listen to your body. If you're constantly trying to get straighter back and extending and it's causing you pain, stop doing that. You know, it almost sounds more like common sense, but then they're like, well, but I've been told my whole life I have to sit really straight. I'm like, yeah, but then, you know, you're the one dealing with the back pain, not the person telling you that. So it's all about having the ability to accommodate your body with whatever it needs. And then my role is then I can also educate you on what is it you need? What is the optimal setup for you so that you can hopefully do everything you need to do without thinking as much about it.
Got you. Yeah. And I wanted to stay away from asking you a bunch of like individual questions, because as you know, like they can be very dependent on the client, what problems they're dealing with, how their body is structured. So I didn't want to dive into a whole lot of what do you do in this situation, in this situation, in this situation. That could be like a whole physical therapy session in and of itself.
Yeah.
But man, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show. And before we wrap up real quick, just want to ask you one more question, which is arguably the most important question on the show, which is, are you a coffee drinker? And if so, how do you drink your coffee?
I am. I'm a coffee addict, actually. I have to have coffee. I mean, I've always enjoyed coffee. It's actually weird. When I was a kid, I just loved coffee. My friends used to hate going to my birthday parties because I'd have a coffee cake and literally no one would eat it but me. But yeah, I've always loved coffee. I thought it, you know, it's useful. I used to just drink black coffee. I had a French press. Okay. I grind my own beans and, you know, do a French press. But for our wedding registry, my fiance asked for an espresso machine, and now I'm like addicted. It's so good. and it's so easy. You just hit the button and you have this espresso ready to go. So I've been doing a lot of that, like lattes or mochas, but I'll drink any coffee. I mean, as long as it's not excessively sweet, you know, like I usually don't add sugar unless it's like a holiday or something. if I really want a cappuccino, like put a little sugar in it. But yeah, black coffee is usually my go-to, or an espresso.
Got you. And on that topic too, real quick, what have you seen in terms of caffeine consumption in gamers? Cause I can imagine that could be something that is abused quite a bit in that situation.
Yep. Especially these energy drinks now, like the game fuel, like performance energy drinks. It's crazy because I used to kind of do this, like when I was, you know, in college and stuff, I would drink pre-workout before I'd go work out, right? Because it just gives you a better lift, and I had all these physiologic reasons for it, but really I just liked it because I was, you know, get all hyped up. But I would always like hop on my Xbox right after I chugged it, thinking, okay, well, there's a 40-minute window before it kicks in, so I can play a couple quick games and get a little bit of that tail end of the energy boost. And I played way better, you know, just because I was high, you know, you're just energetic. And when you're in a good mood and you're energetic, you just do things better. So I think that's kind of interesting that these companies are giving pre-workout to gamers now in the hopes of improving their performance. But the danger of that is these things are so loaded with caffeine and they're marketing it like, hey, have you had that crash at the end of the day when you're about to game and you're tired? Just drink this. I'm like, yeah, but you know what happens is then you're loaded up on pre-workout at 10 at night, playing until 4 in the morning, and you wake up completely wiped. So
yeah,
the teams that I work with that are sponsored by energy drinks, what I tell their players so I don't, you know, bash their sponsor or anything is, look, use the energy drinks the right way. Drink it in the morning or drink it before you have scrim blocks. Do not take this stuff at night. Because if you're taking it at night, you're killing your recovery rate. You're gaming until you're useless, basically, because nobody plays well at 3 a.m. You're just not going to be good. And then the next day, especially if you're on a schedule, you'll wake up groggy, tired, and you'll go into practice like that. And you're going to get a terrible practice out of it. And then you're going to repeat the cycle for 4 days. And then you're going to go on stage and try to beat a team who hopefully hasn't been doing that. Like, I think it's just you see the difference in team cultures affecting how they end up playing. And it's like every other sport. You either take it seriously and you do the right thing, or you don't, and that usually translates to performance.
Have you met a pro esport athlete that has had an amazing sleep schedule, like going to bed at 9:30, waking up at 6 or 7?
Yes.
Like, has that happened?
Yes. A couple actually. So I just interviewed Darshan. Cloud9's top laner. He's like the most cerebral player I think I've met in a really long time. He's just like, his mentality is like, he takes care of his body because he's like, this is my career. And he's embraced that professional athlete mentality. He's like, in my free time, I like to read or meditate. I like to stretch in between sessions of gaming. He's very, very regular in his exercise. When I first started working with him, he basically just wanted to run with less pain. He's like, I already run a lot. I just want to do it so my feet don't hurt after. So there's all these things where it's like he adopted that mentality of, this is my body is my tool that I need to use to work. And if I don't have that, then I can't do what I need to do. And then I think that mentality translates into also how you approach your tasks as a gamer. You know, your the way that you approach practice, or how professional is practice, right? Some people just go through the motions. They don't get much out of it, but you know, talking to him, he's like, I really try to focus on improvement. And there's a very specific goal for each time I play, rather than I'm just going to play this game for 6 hours and hopefully I get better. And then to, you know, I work mostly with Cloud9, so I obviously know them the best, but I also have a huge amount of respect for that organization because of how they operate. So when you ask, do I know any that have regular sleep schedules? Yes, every player on Cloud9 has a regular sleep schedule because they enforce it. They
love that.
Force them to wake up, force them to go work out in the morning. They force them to go to sleep at a certain time. They have regular meetings with psychologists. They have a book club. So they have to read certain books together and discuss. I mean, nice. they've created like almost like a Patriots type, to go back to football, Patriots yeah. type organization, where you buy into that culture because you think it's going to improve you. And then what do you know? When you have a whole team that buys in, you get improvement. It's a really unique scenario, I think, in esports. They're one of the few teams to still do a team house, which means that all the players live together. And then that also fosters that culture building environment. I think a lot of teams now who have apartments, it's good because you can separate work from your relaxation time. You get that division in your mind. The downside is it's really hard to breed culture, especially in players who are joining the team, when they never actually interact outside of being in practice. So, I think that for most players, it's a personal decision. On some teams, it's not. It's just, if you join this organization, this is what to expect, and you have to either do it or you don't last very long there.
Makes sense. Awesome. Yeah. Well, again, Jordan, I appreciate you coming on the show. This was a great conversation. I really enjoyed it. Like I said at the beginning, health and wellness is a topic that's definitely near and dear to my heart. So I'm glad we're able to spread some awareness on it and looking forward to see it continue to grow in the field of esports and gaming in the coming years. But as we're wrapping up, where is the best place that the audience can keep up with what you have going on right now?
First of all, thank you for having me. It's great talking to you. Most of the content I post is on Instagram. It's at Respawn Therapy. And so that'll be all your informational videos. We'll post like infographics, stuff that you can try exercise wise. We, you know, do regular interviews as well. I'll put clips on that for performance. And then if you want to follow me on Twitter, my Twitter handle's on the screen there, which is at JordanSciDPT. Not always tweeting about, this is my personal one, so it's not always tweeting about physical health, gotcha, therapy, health, and all that, but I usually link stuff if I find it interesting. And then also my Twitch channel. So it's twitch.tv/respawn_therapy. So you can also drop on there. I'm going to be doing regular interviews with performance specialists, players, coaches, people in the esports industry, streamers, just to kind of see how they got to where they are, you know, what are the demands of pro life and what are some habits that they can teach us regular gamers and how to play better. Thanks for popping that up. And also stream my mediocre gameplay if you want to just drop in and hang out.
Awesome, man. Well, again, I appreciate you stopping by, and for everyone else who tuned in till the end, whether you're watching live, whether you're watching on YouTube, whether you're listening on audio, I appreciate you guys tuning in. And if you are watching on YouTube, be sure you subscribe. These interviews get streamed live on there as well, and they will go up in VOD version right after, so you guys can watch them as many times as you want. And I think that pretty much wraps up everything I've got for you guys today. Again, Jordan, thank you, and I will see you guys in the next interview.
All right. Thank you, Tommy.